Uh-oh, it looks like Carlos accidentally used his toaster to record his audio again. I just want to warn you before you get into the episode. Don't worry, you can hear everything he says, it just sounds a little toasted. And as always, thank you for listening.
Squirming in the soil of a windswept island lurks a many-legged menace with a taste that raises eyebrows. It's a wriggling, writhing ribbon of ruthless efficiency. Equal parts nightmare noodle and avian scourge. While most creepy crawlies shy away from winged terrors, the Phillip Island centipede turns the tables on them. But sometimes the hunter must become the hunted here in life, death, and taxonomy.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and Taxonomy. It is your 30 minutes of interesting animal information. I'm Joe.
And I'm Carlos.
Thank you to Cassie for the creation of our theme song. To hear more of Cassie's music, please search Cassie Michelle on YouTube or Spotify.
And a very special thank you to our patrons. Thank you so much for your support. It's greatly appreciated. Thanks for helping us keep the lights on. If you'd like to donate, just visit patreon.com. Remember to put the L in there. Like with all websites, /LDTaxonomy, or click on donate on our website at LDTaxonomy.com.
And today we're talking about an insect that doesn't stay in its lane. But more on that later. We've reached the witching hour, the tongue tied witching hour.
Yes, we have got to start recording these earlier in the night. This is an animal that you... We were just talking about Florida's castle laws for starting this podcast and the stand your ground and stuff. If I saw this in my house, castle doctrine...
Would apply.
Would apply. Stand my ground.
An imminent threat.
Yeah, I have genuine fear and for my safety and safety of others. I will execute justice with extreme prejudice.
We were also talking about Florida's anti-animal cruelty laws, so just make sure it's clean, your shots are clean and true.
Yeah, I think it's going to take several to take down this guy, though. This is some Skull Island madness. What are we talking about?
We're talking about the Phillip Island centipede.
Or the Skull Island centipede, based on the lore. Pictures of something. It's not actually the Skull Island centipede. Philip probably wouldn't appreciate having his island called the Skull Island. If I know Philip, and I think I do, he wouldn't appreciate it. But we're going to call it here the Sneak'em and Snack'em, and the Lumen Centipede.
Do you want to hear some science? Lumen, I'm... Is this a reference to the hit Apple TV television show Severance?
No.
Oh, okay.
I don't watch TV. TV's gotcha. For dorks.
TV's for cools. For smarts and cools. It's in the kingdom you know, love, and are in. The kingdom is Animalia. The phylum is Arthropoda. Subphylum is Myriapoda. Myriapoda? Myriapoda?
Myriapoda.
Uropoda? It's all of our pota. The class is Kylopoda. Kylopoda. I'm thinking like... a hard K sound for CH in this case.
Okay. Like chitin?
Or character. Or chiropractor.
Yeah, you never know. You'd think that every time it's an I or an E, it would be a hard, a soft CH. But
like Chile.
Chitin, chiropractor are the exceptions that don't prove the rule. They just show that there is no rule.
That's called an exception.
No,
it's just a regular exception.
an
exception that disproves the rule.
If there are, if 99% of something goes one way, but 1% goes the other way, then that's the exception that proves the rule. If half of them go one way and half go the other way, then there is no rule.
The order is Scolopendromorpha.
Scolopendromorpha.
Yeah, there you go. The family is Scolopendridae. The genus is Cormocephalus. I would shoot this thing just for having these names. Which is, it didn't ask for the bullet or the names. It's really, that's totally unfair. And the species is Coinae. Cormocephalus Coinae.
Cormocephalus is totally fine. That one works.
No, it's
Scolopendromorpha. That one's rough.
Yeah.
That doesn't roll off the tongue.
Yeah, but now that I've said it, it's easier. The other one is, whenever there's these C's in the nomenclature, I don't know what to do with these C's.
You sail them.
Vowels, C's and vowels.
You sail those C's. The last one you had me do, that had so many vowels in it. Like, double vowels, and there was like one word that had 8 letters and 2 consonants. Like, I didn't even know what to do with it. At the end of these words. That's awful.
At that point, you're just doing the that farmer song.
That one farmer song that everybody knows.
Yeah. What's it called? It's too late for me to know what it's called.
Yeah, you missed that. You missed that train. That train has been docked at the station that is my house for a long time, so I'm well aware of the famous farmer song with all the vowels. Since we're in the business of naming things, and business is taking a bit of a downturn, interest rates are high, but we're still in that business. It's time for my favorite part of the show and the listener's favorite part of the show, Nitty Gritty Nomenclature. Part of the show where I ask you, Joe, a question, and that is, what is the English translation for the binomial nomenclature, which in this case is Cormocephalus Coinae,
like the Greek in the Bible.
Yeah, Coinae, Greek. It's not spelled the same.
No.
Okay, does that mean A, body-headed son of a barnacle goose, B, coral-headed sky dancer, C, helmet-faced leaf nibbler, or D, spiny-headed puddle skipper face?
I'm going with spiny-headed puddle skipper face. I'm doing the toddler thing where you give them a list of options and they do the last one. Because it's the one they remember.
That much to my chagrin, that is exactly how toddlers select things from a list. Okay, is that your final answer?
It is.
Spiny-headed puddle skipper face? That is incorrect. The correct answer was the first one, body-headed son of a barnacle goose.
That one sounded so like an insult that I didn't think it was real.
That is a VeggieTales insult if I've ever heard one. Mm-hmm. You body-headed son of a barnacle goose. Cormo is derived from corpo, whose body. Obviously, cephalus is head, so body-headed. Coine is a surname, an Irish surname, anglicized from the Gaelic O'Cadane, which translates to obviously the descendant of Cadding. You're O'Cadding, you're of Cadding. And Cadding means barnacle goose in Gaelic. And I don't know what a barnacle goose is.
None of, so, in real life, what is the name? Like, the Koine is just a name, like, they slapped onto it, although it was discovered by someone named Koch. So I don't know where that name came from. But
it was his best friend.
Is it really Goosehead? Are we trying to say Goosehead?
No, it's body-headed.
Body?
Corbocephalus means body.
Okay, yeah. I understand that now. I understand that now.
And then just the last thing is they slapped some person's name on it that wasn't, I don't know, just named it after, maybe he named it after his sweetheart back at home.
Right.
That was her. He had an Irish sweetheart, and he named it after her.
In 1984.
No. And that was her. Yeah, what? Can you not have an Irish sweetheart in 1984?
No, it's just, it's all 99 Luft balloons and stuff like that. Everyone was worried about.
There were still Irish people back then, Joe. And they could still love.
It is St. Patrick's Day.
It is currently St. Patrick's Day on this day. The only thing that we have done for St. Patrick's Day is eat Lucky Charms for breakfast this morning.
I didn't even wear green. It was a disgrace.
I'm currently wearing green. I'm wearing my Life, Death, and Taxonomy t-shirt.
Well, there you go.
So I'm there now. No one can pinch me. It's 11:30. I made it all the way to 11:30, and no one has pinched me. So I think I was pretty. It was in the clear. But
there was some mutual assured destruction in the office today. Not a lot. Not a lot of green. So everyone, everyone knew if the pinching started, it would never stop.
This office will be rent.
Yeah.
Should the pinching begin, peace was never an option. But yeah, body-headed son of a barnacle goose. That's what somebody looked at this centipede, and named it. Although when I think of the word body head, I think of SpongeBob SquarePants. So.
True.
That's about it. But,
Do you want to know what this thing looks like, since we're talking about what it looks like?
Sure.
Its body is long, flattened, and distinctly segmented, typically with 21 pairs of legs in adults. The body is primarily reddish-brown to deep orange-brown. It's primarily reddish-brown, and in some cases, rare ones are orange-brown. often
some of them are a little bit less red.
Yeah.
And those are the ones you got to look out.
Often a glossy sheen. The segments show subtle darker banding and plating contrasts, while the legs and antenna are noticeably lighter, usually like a pale white or yellowish orange or amber. The head is robust with a prominent, powerful forcipules. The modified front legs that form injecting pincers are called forcipules, apparently. These forcipules are often a brighter yellowish with a green hue, tipped with sharp black claws. It has two legs that point backwards like antenna, creating a false head to fool predators. I wonder if that has something to do with why they were named body-headed. Like, they have the head on two sides of their body.
Would that be body-headed or head-bodied?
Where does one start and the other begin?
It's Ouroboros.
Mm-hmm. Just a long-headed creature.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of how long are they? Welcome to the Beloved Measure Up segment, the official listeners part of the show, when we present the animal size and dimensions in relatable terms through a quiz that's fun for the whole family. It's also part of the show that's introduced by you when you send an audio of yourself saying Senor Chittery. The word is measure up into ldtaxonomy@gmail.com. We don't have a new measure up intro this week, but that means we get to hear from an animal. And Carlos gets to guess who it is. Without further ado, the listener's part of the show.
Now we're lost.
We are not lost.
Then where are we?
Somewhere north. Or possibly very, very far south.
What's your latitude? What's your longitude?
Hey, hey, hey! That's personal, bub.
You said...
That is the only centipede, talking centipede I can think of, which is the, I think he's just called Mr. Centipede.
That's correct. That's Mr. Centipede.
From James and the Giant Peach.
That's correct.
What's our longitude? Hey, that's personal. That movie is
strange.
Very strange.
I liked it.
I did not.
I do not know why I liked it as a kid. It is disturbing. How long will adults be? Adults can grow up to 23 to 30 centimeters or 9 to 12 inches long, making it one of the larger centipede species. The frilled lizard is an Australian reptile that flares its large, colorful frill to scare off predators or rivals. True or false? The frilled neck of the frilled lizard is the same length in diameter as the Phillip Island centipede is in length.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think would you say 12 inches?
Correctamundo.
Yeah, unless that frilled lizard is about to kill Wayne Knight in a Jeep on Isla Nublar, I don't think it's that big. So I think that the frilled lizards, the diameter of the frilled lizard's extended frill is shorter than a foot. So false, final answer.
The correct answer is true.
What?
The frill of a frilled lizard typically measures up to 12 inches or 30 centimeters.
How big is this lizard? Is it a Komodo dragon? Expanded.
No, it's a lot of frill.
Holy moly. I was definitely picturing like the Jurassic Park scene.
Some people are saying 20 centimeters or 25 centimeters. So it's a little smaller, but up to 30.
So it's either like an iguana-sized thing with like this massive frill. Or it's a Komodo dragon with a regular-sized frill.
Which is, it's 90 centimeters or 35 inches in total.
35?
Mm-hmm. For its body length.
Oh, the whole animal. Okay. 35 inches, that is a big lizard. That is iguana-sized, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Their weight. It's a bug, so they don't write down the weights. Bug scientists got to start weighing things.
Maybe that's the opportunity. Really sensitive,
scales.
We just need to go to a university, and ask for like a $10 million grant to weigh bugs.
We really do.
That's how you get rich.
The information the world is needing. Imagine all the things we don't know. Some of those things are the weights of bugs.
And what low-hanging fruit.
Yeah. Actually, it's kind of, you probably would need a $10 million grant, because I would imagine like differentiating between the weight of a ladybug and the weight of like a...
No. You get one of those like super sensitive micro scales. Mm-hmm. You take your the box that you're going to put the bug in, and you weigh it, and then you zero it out.
Yeah.
And then you put the bug in.
Zero like 300% of the weight, the total weight.
Yes. And then you put the bug in, and then now you have your, you know, micrograms or whatever. It's gonna this fruit fly way is there. I mean, in this case, obviously, it's going to be more than a couple micrograms.
Yes, in this case, you probably could weigh this with a conventional, maybe with like a food scale. It's 40 grams, 0 to 40 grams. It's not 0 grams.
It can't be 0 grams. This thing is full of helium. It's negative weight.
It's lighter than air. That's set 0.7 to 1.4 ounces. Estimated, again, don't really know. It's estimated based on the similar sized millipede or centipedes and bugs. So, cherry ripe chocolate is a classic Australian treat with dark chocolate coating, cherry, and coconut filling. Doesn't that sound disgusting?
Yeah, a lot of things that Australians eat sounds disgusting to me. So, what is the Vegemite being just absolutely top on that list? So I'm not surprised.
If you're Australian, have you had cherry ripe chocolate? Is it good?
They've definitely had Vegemite. I'll tell you that. Probably. I'll tell you that for free.
I've never heard of cherry ripe chocolate, but it's apparently a famous Australian treat. True or false, a standard bar is the same weight as a Phillip Island centipede.
What is it, 1.2 ounces?
1.4
ounces. 1.4
ounces?
40
grams.
Sure. Why not? I have no way of knowing what a standard bar size is for a foreign treat.
Final answer?
Yes.
The correct answer is true. So the next time you're an Australian and you are holding and you're holding a cherry ripe chocolate, just know that you could the experience of being about to eat a Phillip Island centipede would be similar in weight.
Well, I don't know if I need to do more good deeds or more bad deeds to be reincarnated into an Australian the next time.
But depends on if you go back in time, probably bad deeds. You'd be a criminal. But now, pretty good, pretty decent. Well,
not if you want to buy a house.
It seems very lateral. Maybe slightly worse if you're trying to be a homeowner.
Right. If you want to be a home, it's better in almost all respects unless you want to be a homeowner or a gun owner. Both of those things you can't are almost impossible in Australia. But you can have cherry chocolates.
Or if you want to play video games online with the Western world.
No, you exclusively play with Japanese.
You have to play, against Japanese and Chinese and Koreans.
if you want to speak English to your Call of Duty teammates, good luck. I guess there are other Australians and New Zealanders that.
The funniest thing about Australia to me is that they are so far removed from most of Western culture. But the neighbor they hate the most is New Zealand.
Do they hate New Zealanders? I didn't know that.
I think there's some bad blood. Yeah, I think there's some bad blood.
Huh. I did not know that. I thought they were chummy.
I think it must have something to do with sports teams.
Maybe that's it.
Reason things. So, do you want to hear some facts, fast facts before we get into the major fact?
Sure.
They're nocturnal hunters foraging through thick leaf litter under logs on the forest floor. They eat insects, especially crickets, but they'll also eat reptiles like geckos and skinks. And they'll also eat other stuff. Don't even think. Just bank that in your brain and we'll come to it later, maybe. It lives only on two tiny uninhabited islands in the South Pacific Ocean. Philip, also known as Norfolk Island, which is a small volcanic island about 3 kilometers in size, and Nepean Island, a nearby even smaller islet. The ecosystem lacks typical large predators, so it doesn't have many natural predators to worry about unless an opportunistic beast stumbles upon it and it just has to take a bite, like a wayward albatross or something like that. They thrive in subtropical forests, scrublands, rocky cliffs, valleys in Norfolk Island pines, or valleys with that particular pine, and areas of bare rock or soil, providing plenty of hiding spots and prey access. Its venom is highly potent and fast-acting to prey, primarily causing rapid paralysis and immobilization. There's not a lot of information on what happens if a human is bit by this thing, because it doesn't live where humans live. But I would imagine it's extremely painful. You can watch Coyote Peterson get bit by a very large centipede, and it doesn't look fun.
It would be not fun even if it wasn't venomous.
Yeah. So if you're an Australian and you're thinking, Phillip Island? That doesn't sound like Phillip Island at all. Phillip Island is also the name of an island just off the coast of Australia where there's like a zoo, there's like attractions and fun to be had.
Philip was fun. This one. Yeah.
It's like so close that like it's got a lot of foot traffic. And I think probably people live there. I kept thinking like, how were there no predators on Phillip Island? If it's so close, it's a big island right next to Australia. How does it not have dingoes and I don't know, and wombats, if wombats would eat a centipede? But how does it not have those things? But it's the different Phillip Island in the larger Oceania, like Australia neighborhood of the Pacific. So in the Australian sphere of influence over islands, there are two at least Phillip Islands.
That's what whenever parents are like, oh yeah, kids, we're going to Phillip Island. And everyone's like, yay. And they're like, nah, the other one. And they're like, oh, the one with all the centipedes.
Big centipedes, yeah. I was going to say, wow, Phillip Island is home to LDT alumni, the little penguin, the little blue penguin. But
that's the different. That's the good one.
That's the other one, yeah.
That's fun, Phillip.
Yeah. Unless you love volcanoes, then Norfolk Island is the fun Phillip Island.
But it's...
For you.
It's got mountains and bugs that want to kill you. So
I don't know if the bugs want to kill you.
When you look at them, it's hard to imagine that they don't.
That they don't want to kill everything? That they don't just harbor hate?
Yeah, they are the manifestation of...
I feel like you're judging a book by its cover.
Arthropodic vengeance.
But that's all I got. Do you have any big facts?
Yeah, big one. I'm calling this fact, I got 99 legs and a chick ate one.
Okay.
Ate one. Even though they don't have 99 legs, they have like 50. But, so the Phillip Island centipede has been documented eating birds. This is a bird-eating bug. I mean, this is up there with the Goliath bird-eater tarantula.
And that's the, not even an insect.
It's not an insect, but it is a creepy crawly that that birds should definitely have the upper hand on. They need to get together and like figure this out. They're like, man, we're looking really bad out there. There are centipedes that are taking us down. There's a crab. The coconut crab's taking us down. The Goliath bird eater, and then the Phillip Island centipede. We're
getting embarrassed by arthropoda out there.
This is embarrassing. But yeah, birds. So they hunt at night. Not the birds, centipedes. They hunt at night. They emerge from rocky crevices. I'm just imagining, what's her name? Not Naomi Watts.
She's Australian.
Nicole Kidman.
She's Australian.
Nicole Kidman was the one that was in Peter Jackson's Kong, right? King Kong? I believe it was Nicole Kidman. Yeah. Where there's just this massive centipede just crawling over the log or whatever she's hiding in.
Yeah, Naomi Watts is just regular. No, Naomi Watts is in Kong.
One of the two.
She's not even Australian. She's regular British.
She's just regular. She's Australian. She's normal.
She's not silly British, like, I don't know. Adventurous British? What flavor of British is Australian?
I'd say adventure British. Maybe.
Yeah. Everything's too expensive there, so that everyone goes on trips.
Yeah, it's British, but you take one side of your wide brimmed cap and you pin it up. That's it.
Yeah.
That's really the only difference between those two entire
cultures.
Yeah.
Reductive.
it's a schema. That's how I get through my life. I don't need to know all the intricacies. So using its venomous forcipules, as you mentioned, its modified front legs that are like pincers, it injects these toxins to immobilize its prey quickly. Now, it doesn't kill full-grown seabirds. That would be quite a feat. It's mostly the chicks, unguarded chicks. Because they are the ones that are the most vulnerable to these stealthy assaults. It's stealthy, so that's why I call them the sneaker and snapper. Its venom is potent enough to subdue animals significantly larger than the typical insect prey, significantly heavier than they are themselves. And this is rare behavior among centipedes. It's rare behavior among creepy crawlies in general. But seabirds are a very high calorie food source that are not something the likes of which are not usually available to arthropods. You usually have to eat a lot of little things instead of one big thing, like a python just eats one thing and then it's good. That's kind of how this centipede works. There are some sources that say that these centipedes can eat up to 3,700 chicks per year.
Oh.
Not that one eats 30. Not one centipede eats 3,700 chicks, but no, the centipede population on this like mile and a half long island eats 3,700 seabird chicks. Go to a different island if you're a seabird, man. This embarrassment to the avian population is on you.
It's sort of an embarrassment for us too. Just all these warm-blooded.
Oh yeah, I forgot we
warm-blooded kin.
I forgot we were on Team Warm-Blooded.
Yeah.
Now I'm getting fired up. Maybe it's my warm blood. I'm a tepid blooded Latino. In case you were wondering, not hot. So it doesn't get hot. It does get like bath temperature. especially when my beloved fellow warm blooded birds are making such fools of themselves by.
It's a cozy heat.
Nesting on just a minuscule island that has foot long murderous centipedes. But I guess if it is out there in the middle of the ocean and it's not like near another place to put your eggs, then it's a little bit more understandable. Like,
there's a bigger island just north.
But like how just north?
Just north.
Like a few hundred miles. Because then it's like, this is
pine.
This is the only speck of land within a little ways. So we're just going to have to tough it out here and deal with the crazy murder snake, bug snakes. All right. So this actually influences the local populations of these birds. Because these, unsurprisingly, as Darwin found out, islands make for pretty confined ecosystems that can be easily tipped one way or the other depending on the availability of food and the specialization of the animals that get that food. So this is this ends up being a case of extreme opportunism. Basically, for centipede, if it can be subdued, it's food. That's their mantra. That's my mantra. It's not my mantra. That would be horrifying. Yes, and this discovery has shaped how scientists view invertebrate predation limits. There are no limits if they can take down birds. But they can also take, it's not just birds. Birds, they just do eat a lot of birds. But they can also take down mice or small mammals and stuff. So mice are out there making us warm bloods looking bad. Making us warm bloods looking bad.
You just sounded like a Gungan.
You take that back. I just watched that movie again. That's definitely the worst part. I kind of want to make an edit of that movie, of Star Wars Episode One, that removes all of the scenes with Jar Jar Binks in it. And I feel like almost nothing would change.
I think there are something like that.
Like, you can get the scene, like, he leads them to the Gungan city, and then you can pretty much take him out for the rest of the movie. Like, he could have died in the Gungan, they could have left him in the Gungan city, and the rest of everything else would have taken place without him. And it would have been a better movie by a nautical mile, even. So, anywho, we're way off topic here, but that's what I got. Phillip Island is a tiny island off the coast of Australia. It is home to foot-long bird-eating centipedes. Visit at your own risk. But you can also say that about the mainland of Australia as well. So, which is also home to large, dangerous animals that are larger than they should be. But surprisingly, no megafauna. But lots of things that are bigger than they should be. Spiders and snakes and crocodiles and stuff. Lots of venomous things. And then weird things, like platypuses and hawks that like to set things on fire for fun.
That is fun.
Bird-eating centipedes. So, that's all I got. You got anything else?
That's all I got.
All right, that was the Phillip Island centipede for you out there in Podcastia. Put your dozens of hands together. Punch above your weight. And like me at Thanksgiving, eat a bird many times your own size, like the Phillip Island centipede here in Life, Death, and Taxonomy.
Hey, Taxonomy Titans. I just want to remind you that we have a Patreon that you can find by going to ldtaxonomy.com/donate. All of our episodes are uploaded there. Sign up for free to engage with us, leave episode suggestions, or chat with other animal enthusiasts. If you find it in your heart to donate, it will help us cover some costs and continue to make the show. Plus, we'll thank you every week. Most importantly, thank you all for listening.
My favorite in the world podcast.
Man, I want to go to Australia. It seems fun. Like, what's going on in the north side of that country? And why doesn't anyone go there?